Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I was going to fly solo today as the college football playoffs are on today, yet I care very little about college football. So I decided to find my good friend Uncle Keefe, good old Vinny Houseplant on Twitter, and he cares very little about the college football playoffs, too. I'm assuming, of course, that could be completely wrong.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right about that. I couldn't care less.
Yeah, no, I guess I kind of want to see how Baker Mayfield plays. I know that he's a head case or whatever, but I'm leaning towards warning him as the Broncos' next starting quarterback instead of Paxton Lynch, who is awful still. Although he did play well on Sunday, but not amazingly. So
one game a quarterback does not make.
Yeah, that is true. So let's get right into really week 17. Yes, some exciting games, but more excitingly, well, maybe not excitingly. It's a morbid kind of excitement. A lot of coach firings. So a lot of open spots. And we'll just kind of go through the list. I have the coaching tracker pulled up here, made by our good friends at Around the NFL on the NFL.com, doing some great work and keeping us up to date on all the coaching stats. I've had Rappaport and Schefter blowing up my phone with their Twitter notifications all morning. So we'll talk about all the things that have transpired up to the point of 3 Eastern time today. So if you're listening to this later in the day and someone's been fired, then sorry, we didn't quite get to it. But let's just talk first about John Fox of the Chicago Bears. No real surprise here, but John Fox, do you think he gets another NFL job, not necessarily as a head coach?
Well, I don't see why he wouldn't, because I didn't think he would after his deal in Denver. I mean, as a Broncos fan, Eric, despite what his record said, I think he owes a lot to Peyton Manning for inflating his coaching numbers when he was in Denver. But I think he's just a very uninspirational coach. He's been with the Bears for 3 seasons now. He's 14-34 over those 3 years. And, you know, he's always been an average coach at best. I think he's milked an entire career out of that one Super Bowl appearance that he made with Carolina where he was bested by the Patriots. But, you know, I think he's just an uninspiring coach. And he did a very uninspiring job in Chicago. But, you know, he seems to always find himself a job somewhere. So I don't really have any evidence to prove otherwise that he won't end up somewhere. I mean, if he could go to Detroit, that seems like a very Detroit-y thing to do, to sign a guy like Fox. So, yeah, I would say that he's going to get another job. I just don't know where he would go. I would say that if Cleveland had decided to get rid of Hugh, which they obviously are not going to do now, I think maybe John would have had a nice little typical John Fox type of run in Cleveland, but that's not going to happen. So as to where he ends up is anybody's guess.
Yeah, let's actually move to Cleveland. I think the Browns are the Browns, obviously, but I didn't think they could get this dysfunctional. But I think the problem is Jimmy Haslam. I think you agree with me. I don't see how this team improves moving forward. But, like, they have quarterbacks who, in college, like Rosen, who is a knucklehead anyways. He's got some character issues that says he'd stay in college if the Browns were going to draft him. It's not a great look for them, and I'm just not sure how a coach survives an 0-16 season. Can you try to walk me through perhaps Jimmy Haslam's screwed up mind?
I don't think there's any blueprint on earth that could help anybody understand Jimmy Haslam's screwed up mind. First of all, they just didn't go 0-16 this year, okay? They are 0-16 this year. They are 1-15 last year, okay? Hugh Jackson has won one football game with this team over the past 2 seasons. Jimmy Haslam is obviously unfit to be an NFL owner. He is completely hapless in everything he does. I don't understand the moves that he makes. I don't understand the decisions he makes. There's this old this old story that he confided in a homeless man, and that homeless man told him to take Johnny Manziel in the draft. Like, everything that this team does is a disaster and a nightmare, and that Cleveland fan base is not deserving of it. And if I would have my druthers, and I think that a lot of people would agree with me on this, I would like to see a Green Bay-type situation in Cleveland. Have no owner. Let those passionate, rabid Cleveland Browns fans who have been with that team from the beginning, who go and show up every Sunday at that mausoleum they call a stadium where it is a funeral every single week, and let the fan base own that team. Let them have a Ted Thompson-like figurehead to help them with the football particulars, and just get Jimmy Haslam out. Jimmy Haslam didn't want the Browns. He just wanted to own a football team, and he wanted the Titans. The Tennessee Titans was what he wanted to own and what he wanted to operate and run due to his, you know, ties that he's had to Tennessee, and he couldn't get them. He couldn't have them, so he just decided to take the Browns and have the Browns just so he can own a football team. And those fans just deserve better than some completely lost mental midget of an owner who has no idea how to run a football franchise. And quite frankly, it's obvious to just casual football fans what's wrong with them. So you look at the dysfunction in that franchise, it's obvious what you have to do to fix it, and they just refuse to do so. The fact that Hugh Jackson still has a job is shocking to me, and it makes fans like our beloved good friend Mark Sessler over there at the Around the NFL, but that poor bastard has been suffering for years and years and years, and it's starting to affect his personal life, I think. And those Browns fans are on suicide watch at this point. It's just been very sad.
Yeah, I agree. There was talk of Haslam bringing in Peyton Manning, which honestly, as a Peyton Manning lover, as someone who, even though he wasn't, you know, the greatest championship quarterback of all time, someone I still consider the greatest just because of blind fandom, I feel
he's
like
he's the greatest regular he season should, quarterback.
We can save this discussion for later, but they should have. If he was going to bring, I think that is the dream scenario for Cleveland at this point, is that Haslam can say he owns an NFL team, and then Manning comes in on the football side of things and is kind of just the overall football owner and leaves the personnel decisions to Dorsey but has some say in it and also makes the coaching decisions. And I feel like that would be the ideal scenario that you're speaking about for Cleveland that I feel is most realistic, because owners unfortunately can't be fired. You can't get rid of an owner.
That is unfortunately true. But here's my counter to your Peyton Manning recommendation. Why would Peyton Manning do that to himself? Why would Peyton Manning,
for the love of the game?
For the love of the game.
Also, okay. He and Jimmy Haslam are very, very close.
If him and Jimmy Haslam are very, very close, then he should know that Jimmy Haslam has absolutely no idea what he's doing. And if I were Peyton Manning, to avoid any kind of rough patch like your buddy John Elway is going through right now. As a player, people have this memory of John Elway. And a legacy is a legacy, whether in football, whether it's a player and or an owner or a GM or whatever. And, you know, Peyton Manning, I think, won't put himself in that position or that kind of role unless it's a situation that is right for him. And I think that he would need to go on more than just being really good friends with Jimmy Haslam to be able to inflict upon himself the amount of suffering he would have to endure in Cleveland.
Right. Moving on, Chuck Pagano fired. Too bad. Great guy. One of my favorite coaches to hear speak and just generally watch. Not great without Andrew Luck. But moving away from that, the Colts as a whole, I've had this discussion kind of all morning throughout Twitter with the people I write with, and they don't think that Indy's a good spot to land anymore, and I disagree. Yes, you have the risk of perhaps Andrew Luck not being the same guy, but behind him, you have a guy in Jacoby Brissett with the right pieces around him that could be a salvageable starting quarterback in the league. And a GM who came in, when you look at it, halfway through the offseason last year, who got to make no moves he wanted to. This team, this was, oh, Jesus Christ. I forgot, is it, who was, Ryan, this team was Ryan Grigson's team this year.
Yes.
Chris Ballard didn't get to make any moves. So I think that, I think the Colts' job is one of the most enticing out on the market.
I would agree with you on a couple of points with that. Number one, I don't think it's as dire of a situation for somebody to go to that place as your compadres are making out. Yeah, you don't know what you're going to have with Andrew Luck going forward, but you do have what you've seen from him in the past. That Indianapolis Colts franchise wasted years of Andrew Luck's prime. They have wasted the talents of Andrew Luck by putting nothing around him, and Andrew Luck won games for that franchise alone when he was healthy. So you have the memory and you have the knowledge of what he's capable of at quarterback if he's able to come back and be healthy. And again, if he's not, your point about Brissett is dead on. I think he played well this year with not an awful lot around him. I think he was competitive. I think he put that team in position to win games. T.Y. Hilton had a bit of a drop-off this year, obviously, because, you know, he's not used to playing with Brissett, but I think that, you know, now that they have the year under the belt, I think Hilton will be able to come back and be an offensive weapon. My concern with Indianapolis is that defense. It's been piss poor for a very, very long time. And again, with Ballard being in there and now him having the freedom to pick his own guys and to kind of have the personnel that he wants to have, they have to fix that defense. And they have to be able to create and present a formula to where they don't have to rely on the offense to put up 36 points a game to win for them. Andrew Luck has been winning games for them all alone. He's been having to score a lot of points because that defense has just been absolutely terrible. So I think that if a coach goes there and you want somebody to come in there and replace Pagano, I think he's got to be a defensive-minded head coach, because I think that you have enough on offense for it to take care of itself and to still score points and be competitive. But if you're gonna have a successful situation there in Indianapolis, you got to fix that defense. It's absolutely atrocious.
Yeah. Moving on to, this was the one coach firing that didn't surprise me. At the same time, really pissed me off, which was Jack Del Rio of the Oakland Raiders. I didn't. Mark Davis is an idiot. The Davises have always been idiots. That's kind of their mantra in the NFL. But I get that he wanted to bring John Gruden in, but I don't get this firing at all. Like, Jack Del Rio was a great head coach. He came into a team that Dennis Allen had completely destroyed, that was a losing team for years, took them to 9-7 on the brink of the playoffs. Then, if he had had his starting quarterback, could have made a run to the AFC Championship last year. And then this year, yes, there was a bit of a drop-off, but that's to be expected when you lose some close games and you don't really have pieces on defense. Like, I don't know. I get the move if you can get John Gruden, but still, who the hell knows if John Gruden can still coach football? Like, he's been in a booth for years. Like, I don't understand this firing, and I really hope Jack Del Rio gets a job somewhere else, because I think he's a good football coach.
He's absolutely a good football coach, and here's the thing. If John Gruden was going to go to Tampa Bay, the Dirk Koetter would have been fired. Tampa Bay went after John Gruden. It didn't work out, and then Koetter was informed that he was going to be kept. In regards to Gruden and the Raiders, I mean, listen, that's why Jack Del Rio was fired. If they didn't have any chance of getting John Gruden, I think they would have stuck with Del Rio for a little while and kind of see where that would have led before they take off for Vegas. But I'm not convinced the Raiders are going to be better with Gruden in there. Because, you know, Gruden will have his quarterback. He'll have David Carr, and he'll have some offensive weapons if Amari Cooper can kind of get back to what he was. He had an awful year this year.
Rebounded in the fourth quarter of the season. He finished strong, but yes, he had a drop off year.
He finished strong, Eric, but he also was tied for third in the amount of wide receiver drops this year in the league. He had a bunch of drops this year. He was tied for third. Derek Carr's back was messed up. He he was never really truly right this year. And when Gruden goes there, he'll have some offensive weapons. He'll have hopefully a healthy quarterback next year. He'll have Khalil Mack on defense. But people forget, John Gruden was a pretty average coach once you remove that Tampa Bay season where they won the Super Bowl. He went 45-51 with the Bucs over the 6 years that followed, Eric, after that Super Bowl year. He only went to two more playoff games after that, and he lost them both in 2005 and 2007. Like you said, he's been in the booth. He hasn't coached in a long time. Everybody's been talking about John Gruden the last couple of seasons. His name's always thrown out there for people who are looking for head coach, and he's held in this regard as this kind of coaching, at the high pinnacle of coaching right now, that everybody wants to get John Gruden. I don't understand why that is. He had one really great year with Tampa and six kind of subpar seasons after that where he was just average. So I'm not convinced that firing Jack Del Rio to get this guy is the best move in the world when you kind of know that you had a good coach already in Jack Del Rio and you're exchanging him for what is essentially an unknown variable going forward here. And not to mention the fact that, people don't think about this and a lot of people don't think it's important, but this team's leaving. This team's leaving soon. They're going to relocate. They're taking off and they're heading to Vegas. So, I know he's already got his defensive coordinator picked up. There's just a lot of weird things going on with this franchise and a lot of unknowns, a lot of other things that are non-football related that you're going to have to deal with going forward. And I just think that getting rid of Del Rio just adds to that, and I just didn't think it was a very smart move. I'm not up all in on John Gruden like everybody else seems to be.
Right. Moving on to my team, and I'll just cover this very briefly. Vance Joseph wasn't fired. I don't know how to feel about this. I feel like it's a step in the right direction because I feel like it's less dysfunctional with John Elway as a GM. If you look at his record, like, it doesn't show immediately, but he's kind of a coach killer and doesn't really show any patience. But I think he's realized that the problems this year were due to him and due to the fact that they didn't have a quarterback, and Vance Joseph is going to stay. But, well, that's all I have to say on that. I didn't know if you had any thoughts. I just thought I'd get my thoughts out there as the resident Broncos fan. But it makes me feel slightly better about the franchise to know that it's not completely dysfunctional.
There is nothing more to say about this situation other than what you just said. Vance Joseph, in no way, shape, or form, should be blamed for what has happened to the Denver Broncos over this past season. They have what is essentially corpses at quarterback. You cannot win football games in this league without a decent quarterback, and the Broncos have nothing close to resembling a decent quarterback. Vance Joseph has been there for one season. I'm not a huge fan of firing a coach after one season, period, to begin with, but to have done that and blamed all of the team's ails on him would have been absolutely ridiculous. The quarterback is the whole problem with that franchise. Did you see that video, Eric, that somebody posted? That was from a couple of weeks ago, where Brock Osweiler is on the sidelines. He's trying to get everybody all amped up.
Yeah, no one's listening.
He's all rah-rah. He's
no one's listening.
Nobody is looking at him. Nobody is paying attention to him. Nobody is listening to him. That is a lack of respect. When your offense doesn't even respect the quarterbacks that you have out there playing for them, that is not good. That is not a reflection of a bad head coach. That is a reflection of bad personnel, and that just goes to show you that you need to get somebody else in there to play quarterback.
Right. That's about all on the coaching side. I want to throw something to you that I thought was kind of interesting. Everyone's talking about these Patriots assistants as future head coaches, and there's some interesting points that not only my compadres have brought up, but just general people I've talked to have brought up. Do you see anyone, because every year this happens, and then they never leave New England. Do you see this year being any different? And if they do, like, I know this is wild, but if they were to win a Super Bowl this year and both those guys were to leave, do you think Belichick might think about retiring? Because it seems like he is a guy that values it's obvious that he values loyalty and people that stick with him forever. And I think it'd be very hard to see him bringing in two new guys to replace the guys that have been his guys for years and years and years and have never really left him.
Well, let me ask you this question, Eric. Did Bill Belichick ponder retirement, or did he retire when Charlie Weiss left? Did he ponder retirement or retire when the guy who went to coach the Browns there?
I don't
Charlie
know.
Charlie Weiss left. All right, well, he's had his two assistants leave
okay.
before. After the Super Bowl.
Well, he was a younger man then.
Yeah, his name is slipping me because it's just been so long. The African-American defensive coordinator that took off. He coached the Browns. He went to the Chiefs for a little while. He did absolutely nothing. This is just not a point on the coaching, okay? These new guys, Patricia and
McDaniel.
And McDaniel, they can go if they want to, and it doesn't matter because this is just not a coaching thing, too. This also has to do with the players. The coaches and the players that have success in the Patriots system, they're all part of a system that is run by a monstrous head in Bill Belichick. When players leave New England, they go other places and they fail. They're not anywhere near as good as they were when they're with New England. When coaches leave, the coaches go other places, and they fail. Charlie Weiss went to Notre Dame and did horribly. If you want to look at the player side, there was a Super Bowl MVP for the Patriots who went to Seattle, and he did absolutely nothing. Lawyer Malloy left New England and did nothing. Whether it's coaches or players, it has nothing to do with loyalty. You want to go and go somewhere else, that's fine. Go and do it. You're all part of a system. No player or person or individual is bigger than the system that New England has put in place there. They succeed, it seems, under any kind of circumstance, with any kind of personnel. They take other people's garbage and they turn it into their treasure. Nobody cared about Wes Welker before Wes Welker came to the Patriots. He was nothing with the Dolphins. You put him in the Patriots system and you make him a superstar. Julian Edelman's role expanded. Same thing with Julian Edelman. You put him in the system. He was a special teams player, and he thrived in there. They gave him more of a role, and he thrives in the system. If Edelman goes anywhere else, he's not going to have anywhere near the success as he does as a New England Patriot. So, to your question, it doesn't matter. He's not going to retire. He's just going to find two more guys that fit the system, that are going to put the players in that system in the position to win, and they're going to continue to win. That's going to continue to happen as long as Bill Belichick is there. That's the end of the story. That's all there is to it.
All right. Moving on to... All right. Let's talk a little bit about the playoffs.
All right. Romeo Crennel. There you go.
Oh.
That's the name I couldn't remember.
Oh.
Romeo Crennel.
Right. He's getting coaching pop again, actually, for some reason.
I did hear that, and
he's not the Houston defensive coordinator right now, or is he? He's a Houston defensive coordinator, isn't he?
I don't know. I'm actually not sure about that.
Let me Google that while I ask you. Okay, you wanted to bring this up pre-show. I don't know what I'd talk about in this game. So talk to me a little bit about Bengals-Ravens. I watched the end of this game. It was probably one of the greatest moments of the NFL season.
It was fantastic. It was fantastic.
But other than that, other than bumping the Bills into the playoffs, like, it seems kind of meaningless to me. Marvin Lewis seems like he's gone. No one knows about Andy Dalton's future. Like, it just seems like a meaningless victory.
Here's the thing, okay? This is a couple of fascinating points to this game to me, and it's reflective of why the Ravens do not deserve to be in the playoffs, okay? The Ravens were one down away from going to the playoffs, okay? That defense absolutely folded, and it just wasn't on that fourth down play that eventually pushed them out. They had an Eric Weddle interception that was overturned because of a defensive penalty on Marlon Humphrey that would have also essentially closed that game out, Eric, and it was just undisciplined football. The defense let up 148 yards rushing between two guys in Mixon and Bernard. It was an absolute epic collapse. They had two golden opportunities to get into the playoffs that was ruined by undisciplined defense. Okay? There's not really much else to say about the Ravens other than that. They were 5 of 17 on third down offensively. I mean, Joe Flacco, I don't understand how this guy won a Super Bowl. This guy resembles nothing like the quarterback that he was during that run that he made. Mike Wallace dropped balls yesterday. Chris Moore had one hit him right in the hands that he bobbled, and it was brought back for a pick six. This is undisciplined, sloppy, awful football with your season on the line. And everybody was hoping the Ravens would get in because it would make for a better football game and a better playoff matchup, and nobody wants to see the Titans, and nobody wants to see the Bills. I don't want to see a team that is that undisciplined and that sloppy make it into the playoff where they're just going to get waxed by a far superior team than them further on down the road anyway. And to have a quarterback like Andy Dalton, of all people, do that to you on 4th and 12 when it matters the most, when your whole season and playoff hopes are on the line, it is horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Those are multiple opportunities that you don't close out, and therefore you're not going to the playoffs, and they shouldn't be, period.
All right. Yeah, well, let's focus on the two teams that got in. Let's start with Jaguars-Titans, because I watched this game, and what I took away from it was this. The Titans are playing their best football going into the playoffs, but that's not their best football, if that makes sense to you. Like, they have a higher ceiling than what they are. I think the DeMarco Murray injury was the best thing that could have happened to them, because they've underutilized Derrick Henry all year. But at the same time, I feel like they aren't maximizing the talent they have on their team. And I know that you're excited to see them getting into the playoffs, but I don't see the appeal. Like, I get it. They might go up into Kansas City, and Kansas City has a bad enough defense that they might go win there. But then what? They go to Pittsburgh, or they go to New England, and they go get waxed. I don't need to see that. Like,
here's the thing, Eric. Here's the thing. What's the difference between the Titans doing that and a team like the Chargers or the Ravens doing that?
Because I think on the right day, the Chargers could beat any team in the AFC. I truly believe it. I think that they got the short end of the stick simply because they had a rough start, but down the stretch, they were a 9-3 team. They were one of the top six teams in the league, and I think if they had gotten into the playoffs, they could have made some serious noise. A Super Bowl run? Probably not. But I definitely think they could have gone into New England and played the Patriots close. I'm not going to say that I'd be confident that they'd knock them off, because I think New England's the best team in the AFC, hands down, but I see the Chargers as the more exciting team to watch over the Titans, because the Chargers have a great defense, the Chargers have a great running game, and they have an experienced quarterback with a great wide receiving core. The Titans have Marcus Mariota and Jarrell Casey on defense, and other than that, they're a pretty middle-of-the-road team, and I don't really want to see that.
Okay, and I appreciate that, but let me counter a couple of points you made there. Number one, everybody wants to talk about how the Ravens would present New England or Pittsburgh a challenge by going into
the... I'm not talking about the Ravens. I agree with you on the...
I hear you, but I'm going to leave it to my points here. Okay, this is not... First of all, this is not the same Ravens teams of past where they've gone and challenged New England, and they've gone and they've played Pittsburgh. This is a dire, inconsistent Ravens offense, and their defense... If they were going to play like they played yesterday, it was atrocious. So you weren't going to get any challenge from the Ravens, I can absolutely assure you on that. Secondly, let me be clear about the Titans here. In no way do I think the Titans are going to stand a chance to beat Kansas City. But I do appreciate new blood and new look in the playoffs, particularly where there's young talent there. And I know I'm absolutely alone in this, but I would rather see how Marcus Mariota performs in a playoff atmosphere and get that new blood and new experience in there, then see the Chargers and Ravens be themselves and end up getting whacked by New England anyway. It's exciting and much more entertaining for me to see new teams in the playoffs. Why would I want to watch any of the old teams who didn't make it when they're just going to get waxed by them anyway? Let's flash back for 2001 real quick as a point, okay? I'm pretty sure nobody gave the Patriots any chance to win in the playoffs back in 2001. With an average QB who managed games, who had no superstar offensive players to speak of, Nobody gave him a shot even to get past the first round, never mind beat the Rams in the Super Bowl. Everybody thinks they know everything, and the fact of the matter is that we know nothing when it comes to football. You just said it yourself. Any given team, you think the Ravens can go out and the Chargers can go out and beat any team in the league? Well, who's to say the Titans can't go into Kansas City and beat them? We don't know what's going to happen there in that game. I'm excited about the possibilities that the Titans and Bills present. It's new football, and it's the possibility of seeing something very special happen, like we saw with New England in the early years. That's exciting to me, and that's why I fell in love with football as a kid, and I just think it presents a much more appealing possibility with the Titans and Bills than it does with the Ravens and Chargers. We know what happens with the Chargers in the playoffs. They lose. We know what's going to happen to Baltimore when they go to New England or Pittsburgh. They're going to lose because they've just been playing terrible football. The Chargers, I mean, they've been playing good down the stretch. They won 6 of their last 7. They lost that game to the Chiefs, and ultimately that's the game that's going to cost them from getting into the playoffs. Rivers threw 3 picks. That was a terrible game. But they started 0-4, Eric. They did themselves in before the season even got going, and so it's their own fault. I mean, they're not in. They're not in there. That's how it works. But I'm excited for the Titans, and I'm excited about the Bills because I've seen what happens with those other teams, Eric.
Right. Moving on to the Jaguars, I, at one point, believed that this team could go to the conference finals. That was foolish because watching this game, and I know it's so obvious, but I just, for some reason, Blake Bortles has this effect where, like, when he's really good, you're like, man, I could get behind Blake Bortles. But then he's really bad. He's the most, I wrote about this in an article last night, and I want to see if you agree or not. He's the most volatile quarterback in football because he can either push your offense over the edge and put up 30 or 40 points, or he can throw 4 picks, completely derail your game plan, ruin your chances of winning, and get you blown out. I am not excited to see the Jaguars in the playoffs.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that Blake Bortles has been playing better football over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks than, say, Brad Johnson played with Tampa Bay? Or that...
Or Trent Dilfer. I just want to clarify. I never saw any of those guys play.
Brad Johnson was no special quarterback either, and neither was Trent Dilfer.
Give me an example.
Difference in how Blake Bortles is playing. You're right about Bortles. He's either going to go out and have a good game, or he's going to sink you and throw 3 interceptions. That's just kind of what you get right now at this point in Blake Bortles' career. I'm not overly excited about the Bills, especially without Shady McCoy out there. But if Bortles goes out there and throws 3 interceptions, with or without Shady McCoy, the Bills are going to have a legitimate chance to beat them. You can't rely on that defense week in and week out to be able to win you games with that erratic of quarterback play. He's not like a steady-as-she-goes kind of underwhelming quarterback. He's either going to go out and he's going to ball and put up 330 yards and throw a bunch of touchdowns, or he's going to throw you 3 picks and he's going to lose you a game. It's the erratic quality of him. There's no steady play from Bortles. I would rather him be just an underwhelming quarterback who doesn't lose games week in and week out. I think they have a better chance to go farther in the playoffs if he was that kind of quarterback. But he's not. He's so erratic and up and down that you don't know what you're going to get from him every week. And I think the Bills have a legitimate shot of beating them with or without Shady McCoy.
So, this is that game, Jaguars-Bills. Like, as much as it's, quote, bad football, to me, that's the most fascinating game of wild card weekend.
Absolutely, it is.
Because even if it's bad football, it's going to come down to the wire. Neither one of these teams is going to blow each other out. For as much love as Sean McVay gets for Coach of the Year, he has an incredibly talented roster to make his system work with. Sean McDermott, if you look at the roster, has nothing, and he somehow gets this defense to perform well enough, I think, to win them games. They get constant pressure on the quarterback. Tre'Davious White has played, I think, Pro Bowl level cornerback play. And I just think, I didn't want to go into this, but, and I'll explain more, of course, on our later shows this week with our normal co-hosts, but I took the Bills in this game. I don't think the Jaguars win. I think the Bills, simply based on the magnitude of this game for the franchise, realize that. I think they're going to win this game. And then, unfortunately, they're going to go get waxed by New England. But it wouldn't shock me if the New England game is within 10 points because Brady doesn't play well against Buffalo. Now, in no way am I saying Buffalo can beat New England, but I just think that the Bills win, and I think the Bills and the Patriots is an incredibly interesting matchup to think about because it could go so many ways, especially if Tom Brady and that offensive line struggled like they did against New York for most of the game against the Jets.
I was giving some thought to the Bills-Jags game yesterday, and I was thinking, well, you know, that's going to be a pretty good game. It's going to be pretty close. I'm going to take the Bills in this game only because, on one caveat, I'm going to take the Bills. And that is, I think the Bills are going to win this game if they can put defensive points on the board. If the Bills can get some points on the board through their defense and not rely on Tyrod Taylor and Kelvin Benjamin to get him in the end zone, because that's essentially what they're going to have to do if Shady McCoy's not going to be out there playing. I know his x-rays were negative, and we don't really know what's going on with that yet, but if he does play, he obviously will not be at 100%, and that's going to make it very easy for the Jags to kind of contain them a little bit. Once you take Shady McCoy as an element out of that game, and it makes it a whole lot easier to stop that offense. You don't have to focus on Shady McCoy, and a lot of the other options are kind of shut down. But I think if the Bills can hang with Jacksonville defensively, like how Jacksonville's defense has played the majority of the year, if they can kind of find a way to put some points on the board defensively, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that the Bills are going to win this game. But again, I think it just relies on their defense and whether or not what kind of role that Shady McCoy will play if he's able to go out there and play.
Flipping to the Atlanta Falcons, and I'll ask you more of this because I'll save my thoughts, of course. It's hard for me to talk playoffs right now because I want to keep things to a minimal so I don't repeat myself here, but the Falcons beat the Carolina Panthers and are now in the playoffs. The Falcons, to me, are a really interesting team, and they draw the toughest matchup in the first round of the playoffs against the Rams, but I think this year, for as bad as they have been at points, I think at other points, the Atlanta Falcons win the biggest games. Like, if you give them a pressure situation against a good team like Seattle, like Carolina, like New Orleans in their own building, they are going to go out, and no matter what, they're going to find a way to win. What are your thoughts on this Falcons team?
My thoughts on this Falcons team. Well, first of all, I don't give them much of a chance to beat the Rams, to be honest with you, because number one, they're just flat out better in every single aspect of the team. Their offense is better. Their defense is better. Their special teams is better. Todd Gurley did not play this past week. He's going to be well rested. He is the focal point of that offense. He's going to kill you in the running game. He's going to kill you in the passing game. The Falcons' offense is so ridiculously inconsistent that you don't know what you're going to get from them game in and game out. Julio Jones, what happened to him this year? By the way, he's tied for second in drop passes. He has 7 dropped passes this year. He's got 4 more drops than he has touchdowns this year, Eric. That's insane. This is a guy who's supposed to be the amongst the most elite receivers in the league, and he just had not a very good year despite what his final statistical line states. And if the Falcons are going to have any chance at all against the Rams, they're going to have to get Julio Jones involved, and Julio Jones is going to have to perform. Because when he is at peak ability, and he is doing what Julio Jones has done in the past, that Falcons offense is very, very good and very, very difficult to stop. But if Julio Jones is taken out of this game, or if he has a bad game, that Rams defense will lock down. It will take control. I think they have enough looks on defense to kind of have Matt Ryan be in suspended animation all game. That defense is insane, and I trust more the Rams offense at this point than I do the Falcons offense, because like I said, Gurley's rested, and they're going to be ready to go, and there's excitement in that Rams team. They haven't been in the playoffs in a while. They haven't been this good in a while. They got a great new coach. They got a great quarterback. They got a great running back. They have a good defense. They have all of the elements that they need, and I just think that they're flat out better than Atlanta across the board, so I think it's going to be tough for them to go in there and win.
All right. Well, I think for week 17, that's it. But while you're here, I just kind of want to break down, ask you a few playoff related questions.
All right.
Okay. Who is the best team in this playoff field?
In the entire field, AFC and NFC combined?
Yeah.
It's probably not going to be a popular answer with a lot of people, but I say it's the Rams. Everybody wants to say that the Vikings are better than the Rams in the NFC. I don't see it. I just absolutely don't see it at all. I think they have a better running game. I think that when they're at their peak, their defense is better. The quarterback position, I mean, are you going to rely on Case Keenum to get you to a Super Bowl and win you a Super Bowl? I mean, I know he's had a good year, but it's Case Keenum. Like, you're going to rely on this guy to win you a Super Bowl. I know you can make the same argument for Jared Goff. He's a young guy. You know, he had a rough year last year. He's had a good year this year. But I just think that the Rams are better. They're better than anybody in the NFC. And I think that if it came down to the Rams and the Patriots, I wouldn't be shocked if the Rams beat them. I don't like the Patriots' defense, and that's the only thing that's keeping me from saying that the Patriots are the best team. Brady has not looked good. He has been shaky the last three or four games or so. And, you know, he's notorious for kind of petering out a little bit towards the end of the regular season and kind of reserving his tank for the playoffs. It kind of happens every year where he has some off games towards the end. But I haven't seen arm fatigue like this in Brady in those past seasons. His throws have been looking pretty out of the ordinary for him. And that defense, again, you just don't know what you're going to get when they go in there. They've been ridiculously inconsistent. And, you know, it's a lot easier to kind of put it on the defense because Brady's Brady, and you can't really bet against him because he's got the track record and you know what you really have in him. And then the playoff comes, he's ready to go. But that defense is just, it's just not good. It hasn't been as dominant as other Patriot teams in the past. And I just think that the Rams are the better team. And I think that even if they had to play Pittsburgh, I think that they could probably take out Pittsburgh. So I know it's not a popular answer, but I'm going to go with the Rams. I just think that they're my favorite team in this league. I just think they're really good.
Okay. The most surprising team in the playoffs could be who?
Oh, the most surprising team in the playoff could be who? Oh, that's a good question. You know what? I think it could be the Bills. I think it could be the Bills. Like I said, it's going to depend a lot on how much they can get Shady McCoy in there. If Shady McCoy's done for the year and they can't use him, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. But I think that if Shady McCoy can get in there and play and contribute a little bit, I think that Bills defense is going to step up. That Bills defense, you even said it yourself, against New England, they give Tom Brady fits. And I think that that's even more of a detriment to New England than Baltimore would have been, where everybody says, that, well, be careful if Baltimore makes it in. They're going to, they happen to be Brady's kryptonite. I think Buffalo is more kryptonite to Brady than Baltimore could have ever possibly been this year. I think they're going to get by the Jags. And then if they happen to go to New England, then I think that's going to be a really great game. And I think that they could surprise some people and take out New England. So we'll see. But I think I'd have to go with Buffalo. I'm not definitely, I don't see much of a surprise hidden anywhere else with any of these other teams in the league.
The Chiefs will do what this postseason?
I think the Chiefs will be the Chiefs. I think they will be Andy Reid. I think Andy Reid will Andy Reid out. I think maybe they beat Tennessee, and then that's it for them. This is just kind of what the Chiefs do. There's usually some kind of Andy Reid guffaw somewhere along the lines in the playoff, whether it be clock management or an ill-advised decision on a down. I just think that, you know, they'll have the luxury of being at home to win that playoff game at home against Tennessee, where it's super loud and it's a very, very tough environment to go in and play games. But I just think that'll be it for them. I think the Chiefs will just do what the Chiefs does. I think they'll Andy Reid out, and that'll be the end of them.
Okay, this question kind of relates to that, but are the Steelers a Super Bowl team?
Are the Steelers a Super Bowl team? Well, I mean, I guess that all depends on whether or not they can take some lessons from that last Patriot game. I think that if they are going to go to the Super Bowl,
yes or no,
they'll have to get through New England. But, I think that if Buffalo should happen to do what, you know, we just talked about and beat New England, then yeah, they most definitely are a Super Bowl team, because I think Pittsburgh would just have too much for Buffalo. But if Pittsburgh has to play New England, here's the thing, Eric. It's, at this point, it's a mental game. The Patriots live inside the Steelers' head. They own Pittsburgh. It doesn't matter if it's in Foxborough. It doesn't matter if they go to Pittsburgh. The Patriots are in their head, and they will find a way to win. Now, if all these, you know, butthurt people want to talk about how they get screwed and it's bad reffing and whatever, I mean, say what you want about how the rules are constructed. There was nothing illegal about that call. According to the call, that's how it goes. But at this point, it has nothing to do with the football X's and O's. The Steelers allow the Patriots and the track record of the past of what they've done against this football team to get in their head. So it's a mental block. And I don't see anything that is going to dictate that they can overcome that. Mike Tomlin is owned by Bill Belichick. Ben Roethlisberger is owned by Tom Brady. This Steelers team, no matter how good they are, no matter how built up they've been or how good of a season they have, when it comes down to playing New England, they fail. And until they do something to get over that mental block, that's going to continue to happen. And I just don't see it happening this year. They're going to lose. If it comes down to Pittsburgh and New England in the AFC Championship game, the Steelers are going to lose another game to the Patriots, plain and simple.
All right. So with that all being said, your AFC and NFC championship games, how do you see them play them out? Who wins?
I think it's going to be the Steelers and the Patriots. I'm not going to be too much against the grain with that pick. It seems to be everybody else's pick, too. And that's just simply because they're the two best teams. I mean, you can say what you want about surprises and stuff like that, but it's going to be the Steelers and the Patriots, and the Patriots are going to beat them. Even if that game was in Pittsburgh, I don't see the Steelers beating the Patriots because of that aforementioned mental game. So the Patriots are going to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. And as far as the NFC is concerned, I like the Rams. I don't see anybody beating the Rams. I think that as far as the Vikings are concerned, it's a little bit of an overwhelming situation. And, you know, you get that extra element of the fact that no team has ever hosted a Super Bowl and made it to that Super Bowl. And I think that, you know, that plays a little bit of a mental game with teams. And I think that combined with the fact that you have that quarterback in Minnesota to get you to a Super Bowl and win you a Super Bowl against teams that are like Pittsburgh or New England, whichever one it may be, I just don't see it happening. I just think the Rams are a better football team. I think that if they have to go to Minnesota and play Minnesota, they'll beat them there. That offense is just ridiculous, and I don't see them being able to stop them. So I'm picturing a Patriots and Rams Super Bowl again. It'll be a replay of the 2001 Super Bowl.
And then what's the final score of that game? Like, who wins, and what is the key to that game?
I think if the Patriots are going to win that game and hold that team off, they have to play better defense. If they show up and play the type of defense that they've been playing of late, the Rams are going to roll them over. I don't care. You can say whatever you want about Tom Brady. I think that the Rams have enough offensive weapons to match whatever Brady does offensively. They've got Gurley. They've got some great receivers. Cooper Kupp had a great year. Sammy Watkins has been coming on a little bit. Everything runs through Todd Gurley. Not only do you have to worry about him as a running back, you got to worry about him as a passing back, coming out as a receiver. And I just think that offensively it's a dead tie between those two, and it's going to come down to whoever plays better defensively. But again, because they're well-weathered and because they have the experience and they know how to win those games, I'm going to take the Patriots, not just because I'm a Patriot fan, just because I think that that's how it will end up. I think experience goes a long way. I think Brady is still Brady, and he's the champ until you take it away from him. So I'm going to go 36-24 Patriots.
All right. And with that, that closes out the show. Thanks for coming on, man. It's been since our AFC North preview, I think. But you know, we're glad to have you on. You're a world famous rock star, if you want to plug that. you've got a decent Twitter feed, and you have some pretty okay football takes. So
I'm glad that you can consider my Twitter feed decent. I appreciate that, Eric.
Yeah. Well, it's not, you know, it's not elite. It's the Joe Flacco of Twitter pages. So.
Oh, if that. I'm below the Andy Dalton line, if we're going to be honest about it. But Happy New Year to you, Eric. Thanks for having me on, man, and enjoy the rest of the playoffs, huh?
All right. And for our listeners, we will be back tomorrow or Wednesday, just doing kind of a general playoff overview, like the questions I just asked Keith, but with my answers and the answers of Christian Castain and John Butler and whoever else may join us. And then on Thursday, we will have our overall playoff prediction show. We'll go over wildcard weekend. We'll give our picks to win game by game throughout the playoffs, and that'll be great. But until then, we will see you tomorrow. Peace out.
Landry Jones is-